I did what I called introduction to this topic, what I'm calling dialogical Vaishnavism. Dialogical means having to do with communication, and Vaishnavism means having to do with Vishnu. Vishnu? What? Yes, Vishnu. As the history of our tradition goes, even though followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are, in a sense you could say, much more interested in Krishna than in Vishnu, the designation of Vaishnava has persisted. There are many Vaishnava traditions. We can say there are four primary traditions of Vaishnavas in India, and sometimes the Chaitanya Vaishnavism or Gaudiya Vaishnavism, sometimes seen as a fifth, or as part of one of the four from the Madhva Sampradaya. Anyway, that's not our subject today. Subject is dialogical Vaishnavism, and this has to do with what has come to be called interfaith dialogue or interreligious dialogue. And so, 2 weeks ago, who was here 2 weeks ago? Many of you, yes. You may remember, those of you who were here, I presented at the end of that introduction, I presented the official position, the official statement of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness on the subject of interreligious or interfaith dialogue. Do you remember? Something, yes. So the basic principle of that statement is that it's a good thing. It's a good thing, and it's something that is not only a good thing, but it's an important thing. Why is it important? Well, we could probably discuss lots of reasons why it's important, but what I thought to start with today is the possible Purva Paksha, that's a fancy technical word. Purva Paksha means the doubt or the position which is contrary to the argument, the position which a person is making. So there's Purva Paksha on the one side, which says, and then there's Siddhanta, which says, after making several arguments of why the Siddhanta is a reasonable position. This is the basic format of all of our tradition, the ancient Indian tradition, of debate. But we're not interested in debate. We'll get to debate in a minute, but we're not today talking about debate. What's the word for debate in Slovenian?
Rasprava.
Sounds pretty bad. You also say debata?
Yes.
Okay. No, we're not so interested in debata or razpravda. We're more interested in dialogue, dialogue, huh? Yes. Okay. So, is this all right? Shall we talk about this today? Let's see what happens. All right. So, some possible doubts and reservations about engaging in dialogue could be there. And this is one of them. Our business is preaching, not sharing with others. We, in our Society for Krishna Consciousness, we hear a lot about preaching, and that preaching is what we do. Preaching is what our mission is. We want to preach the teachings. We want to preach the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gave very wonderful teachings, a sort of super condensation, we could say, of the Veda, the Vedic literature. So our business, one might argue, really is just to practice. Well, yes, we can say our business is preaching and practicing what we preach, right? We say, practice what you preach. Don't just preach, but practice what you preach. What word do you generally use for preach in Slovenian? This always happens. 10 people answer, and then I can't catch even one.
Pridigaj.
Pridigaj? Really? Pridiga. Huh?
Pridigaja.
Pridiganje. Right? Pridiganja. Now, we have an expression in English when someone is sort of like the silhouette figure you see here, when somebody is doing like this to us, we say, don't preach to me. Ne pridigaya. To me, how do you say?
Many.
Me?
Many.
Many. Me.
Many.
Ne pridigaya many.
Ne pridigaya
me.
Oh, it's okay. Imperative pridigaya. Ah, it's like Polish. Ne pridigaya me. Many. Many.
Ne. Many or me. Both.
Oh, it can be both. Okay. Thank you. We're having a Slovenian lesson now. Do you sometimes say that also?
Yes.
Somebody's like this and you go, ne pridigaj mi. Yeah. So there has become a quite negative connotation to this word, preaching or prediganja. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a negative connotation, isn't it?
Yes.
In the modern world, nobody wants to be preached to. But we hear again and again, those of us who come here regularly, we might hear it, that ours is a preaching mission. And from that perspective, one could possibly feel justified in saying, it's not what we're about. We're not about, we're not about this sharing, as I was speaking about last time. We're about preaching, So this could be something we might feel this as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah, some of you might feel like this. All of you might feel like this. You're all looking at me like, are you going to tell me something different? Well, uh-oh. Come back. Okay, next one. Okay, someone may, in the same or similar spirit, say we should rather be prepared for debate to establish truth over falsehood. Yes? No? What do you think? Yeah. Yeah. Let's debate. Okay. It's us against the world. Okay. That may be a position to take, and debate is very much part of our tradition, specifically in that area of philosophy which is known as nyaya. Nyaya means, it's usually translated as logic. It's a kind of broad field. It's a whole way of understanding the world. Therefore, it's called a darshana, based on, or at least theoretically based on, the Veda. And in that tradition, they speak a lot about debate. They analyze debate. There are three different qualities of debate. There's debate which is genuinely pursuing truth. There is debate which is more like argument, perhaps more for the sake of winning than anything else. And there is debate which consists mainly, essentially, of insulting each other. Obviously, there's three qualities there. Huh? So what we see in the modern age, unfortunately, is when there is disagreement, what is there? What kind of debate goes on? Much of it is in the form of insult, simply throwing words back and forth. Who can speak the loudest? Which one is the alpha male in the room? You know, that sort of thing. But one might argue, well, we won't do that kind of debate. We will engage in what is called vada. Vada means debate with the purpose of reaching truth. Yes, that is part of the tradition. But someone may say, we're not interested in dialogue. It's debate, the form of dialogue. Or they might say, well, you can talk about dialogue, but the real kind of, the serious dialogue, the sort of dialogue that would be beneficial would be debate. Someone may say that. And someone might say, well, listening to others, because I spoke about that last 2 weeks ago, that, you know, conversation, usually there's at least two people, and if we speak about communication, then there's not only speaking, there's also some listening involved. But someone may say, listening to others? That's not what we're about. We've already heard it all. We've already heard what everyone... Really? Have you? Have you really heard everything that is to know about other religious traditions? This we might ask. But someone may still have the doubt, well, yeah, but if I'm listening to others, isn't that going to affect me in such a way that I may not lose my faith, but I may, we say in English, water it down. It may get watered down. How would you say that in Slovenian? Watered down. Raz? Razvodeniti. Sounds pretty bad. Unless you have very too much concentrated fruit juice, and if you drink that straight, you might become intoxicated, and that's against the rules. So we might want to water that down, but we may not want to water down Vaishnava philosophy, right? What was the word again? Raz? Razvodeniti. I should make notes. Then I can.
Voda, water.
Razvodeniti.
Voda is water.
Yes, voda is water. Yes. Even I know that. Isn't interfaith dialogue a waste of time since no one changes their position? That's a good one, right? Big waste of time. And they have their position, they have their position, they have their position, we have our position. And we talk, and maybe in the end we shake hands and we all go home and nothing changes. I've participated in some formal interfaith dialogues where at the end I kind of felt like this was not interfaith dialogue, this was serial monologue. One person will speak, this is what we say, this is what we believe. And then the next one says, yeah, we, and they completely ignore the first one. They say what they believe, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. By the time you get to the last one, everyone's completely forgotten what the first one said. So, yeah, one might feel like a waste of time. And for some, it might be true. I once asked a scholar in Oxford who made it his subject, his specialty, to study the history of interreligious dialogue, interfaith dialogue. And there was a big interfaith dialogue going to be coming up soon, the International Parliament of the World's Religions. And I sort of bumped into him one day and asked, so what do you think of this upcoming Parliament of the World's Religions event? And he said, yeah, it's good. What's good about it? Well, the main thing is that it happens. It's good that it happens. The content of what everyone is saying, he was not so excited about. So one might feel like this, that, you know, interfaith dialogue is perhaps really not having any lasting benefit for anyone. One might feel that way. Well, maybe. Let's review this statement of ISKCON, the International Society for Christian Consciousness, on interfaith dialogue, shall we? Very quickly. This whole slide is showing the first of 5 points. In ISKCON, we view all communities and philosophies advocating and practicing love for God and founded on revealed scriptures as representative of the ultimate religious expression. Did you know that?
that we view? We have this view. Do we have this view? We also respect the spiritual worth of paths of genuine self-realization and search for the absolute truth, in which the concept of a personal deity is not explicit. Yeah, there are religious traditions. One might debate, are they religious or are they not? Well, many reasons could be given for why they are religious, even though a personal deity is not explicit. And a sort of third level of appreciation, if you like, other communities and organizations advocating humanitarian, ethical, and moral standards are also valued as being beneficial to society. We value these. You may say, oh, but they're completely mundane. But our official statement says, they might be mundane, but they might also be somehow or other beneficial. They may be elevating people in such a way that at some point they may take up what we would like to call Krishna consciousness, or more broadly, God consciousness. The second point is ISKCON views dialogue between its members and people of other faiths as an opportunity to listen to others and to understand what others believe and value, to develop mutual understanding and mutual trust, and to share our commitment and faith with others while respecting their commitment to their own faith. What? Really? Do we say that? Yes, we say that. Surprise, surprise. Yes. It's about respect, and we'll get to this a little bit later, I think. And it's about mutual understanding. The understanding may be limited, but there still can be some understanding. And with understanding, there can be trust. Trust? That's becoming a more and more rare commodity today in our age of surveillance. Right? What's the word for commodity?
Dobrina,
a rare commodity.
Ritka Dobrina.
Okay, I'm noting this down. All right. Number three, ISKCON recognizes that. Oh, this one is going to really shock you. ISKCON recognizes that no one religion can hold a monopoly on the truth. What? I thought we had a monopoly. On the revelation of God or our relationship with God. We assert that the Lord, in his individual relationships with his devotees, governs these things, these matters. So it's a matter of relationship. We say we are personalists. We say that. And we say that God is the supreme person. And we say in his unlimited personhood, he can relate with every single person, infinite individual persons individually. So no one religion. So, of course, this brings up, what is a religion? What constitutes a religion? If you kind of dig a little bit deeply into the topic, on the one side, Srila Prabhupada many times identified or defined religion in a very simple and clear and we can say sublime way, and that is religion is the laws of God, the laws established by God. Okay, then, if that's religion, where do we go from here? Where do we go from that understanding to a recognition that there are, as I showed last time on a little chart, there are so many different religious traditions in the world today with different percentages. You remember that, I think it was a pie chart? How do we get from this understanding, it's the laws of God, to there are so many traditions of understanding God? I won't address that just here. The fourth point, ISKCON's members are encouraged to be respectful. Respectful and supportive. Supportive? Of people of faith from other traditions. Really? And to see the need for people of different faiths to work together. What? Work together? Huh?
Not even be motivated.
Not even? Oh, right. To work together for the benefit of society as a whole and for the glorification of God. Really? Everyone is silent. Everyone's in shock. Is this our statement? Now, hold on to your seats. Here comes number five. ISKCON affirms the responsibility of each individual to develop his or her relationship with the Supreme Lord. Oh, I thought I'd just have to sort of tag along and turn off my mind and turn off my intelligence and just coast along and just keep eating prasadam. And everything will just happen automatically. Let me guess, the word for automatic in Slovenian? Automatične. No? Close. Auto? Automatično. Oh, come on, I was so close. Automatisch, no. But I'm sure the ending changes depending on the grammar, right? The point is, where is the responsibility for doing what Srila Prabhupada is the basis for how a Vaishnava would judge, if we are going to judge, the value of a religious tradition, namely, is there in this tradition a way of developing love for God? Here, the statement is putting the responsibility not on a tradition, not on an organization, an institution, but on individuals. Now, you could make an argument, well, that's a very Western style of thinking, this, you know, rugged individualism or whatever. But again, I will leave that for now. Now, I'm watching the clock and I don't want to stretch your patience, but perhaps I'll just start with the how-to section, which is really about, first of all, the theological basis. That's, I think I just have one slide on that. Theological basis. The idea is we have a term, sanatana, means eternal. Dharma, again, Srila Prabhupada would translate that as the laws of God. But if it's eternal, if it's really enduring, then it must be non-sectarian, isn't it? There must be something which is enduring, which is not about this or that sectarian way of thinking. There must be something beyond that. If we study the preaching of Srila Prabhupada, very much it is on this point. It is not a matter of belief that we, in these material bodies, we get older, we suffer from disease, and eventually this body dies. It may be a matter of belief, one may say, that one is then reborn, but Krishna gives us reasonable arguments how it is the case. But again, that's another subject. Okay, principles and guidelines for approaching people with faith in God. The picture here may not be so clear. It's grass, and there's a measuring stick in the grass. So I use this to illustrate Trinada Bhisunichena. What is Trina? Trina. Trina. Trina means grass. And Nicha means low, and Sunicha means very low, and Upi means even or more than. Trinadapi Sunichena, being more humble, lower than the grass. That is one of our foundational preachings or teachings, Shiksha teachings. Trinadapi Sunichena, Taroriva Sahishana, Manina, Manadena, Kirtaniya, Sada Hari. We can always chant names of the Lord and thereby connect with the Lord, being non-different from the Lord. How? If we have this attitude of humility. Humility, tolerance, honoring others, not expecting honor for ourselves. Right. Our tradition establishes that this is the key to building spiritual relationships. It is also the principal quality of a Vaishnava, humility. Now, the picture has a measuring stick, and one might say, but humility is not something you can measure, and you would be correct. It's not really something you can measure, but you can understand when it's there, isn't it? You can understand it's there in yourself. You can understand it's there when it's there in others. And when it's not there, usually we're very good at detecting when it's not there in others. We're better at detecting that than we are at detecting it in ourselves. What's the word for detect?
Zaznati.
Yes. Zaznati. To detect. He detects. She detects. Zaznati. Okay. Infinitive?
Zaznati.
Oh, okay. Okay, one more. And then... So, another principle here to keep in mind, we're talking about dialogue with different religious traditions. So one principle for a Vaishnava is to understand the unlimited nature of Krishna. So the absolute truth is universal. No individual or organization has a monopoly on the Lord. He reveals himself wherever, whenever, however, and to whomever he pleases. Wow. Really? Are you sure? If one of the definitions of God is that he is... That's my twin brother. He's following me around. Hare Krishna. So, what was I saying? Yes, if we understand that God is, he's all-powerful, certainly, and he's also completely independent, right? This, okay, another Slovenian word we need, independent.
Ne odvisen.
Kompletni. Neodvisen?
Povsem neodvisen.
Okay. Yeah, if he's completely independent, that means, what are the implications? One implication is that it's entirely up to the Lord. Whether or not he reveals himself, how he reveals himself, when he reveals himself, and to whom he's going to reveal himself, right? It's up to him, ultimately. We're very fortunate. The Lord appears in five forms, not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. Panchatattva. And he's right there. Every time the curtain opens, there he is. There they are. But the Lord can appear in so many ways. So that's the unlimited nature of the Lord. We like to call him Krishna because he is all attractive. And being attractive, we understand everyone is attractive one way or another to the Lord. And in a sense, what we could say is, what is dialogue? It's finding ways to draw out others' attraction to Krishna. Finding, somehow or other, everyone must be attracted to Krishna. Can we encourage that? So, I'm going to stop with that. So I'm ending with a question. Can we encourage everyone in their culture of... They may not like to hear Krishna consciousness. How about God consciousness? How about consciousness of the ultimate person, the supreme person, supreme truth? How can we encourage that? Okay, I think I should stop there. Before I stretch your patience, I just want to ask, because His Holiness Chandramouli Swami has been very patiently sitting through all of this. Maharaj, do you want to make some corrections to what I've said? Please say again.
If I made an attempt to try to make corrections, I would be guilty of impudence.
Impudence. Little impudence is fine. We don't mind. We're amongst friends here.
I was just absorbing rather than analyzing, as I was listening. Trying to understand as you were presenting the different principles or dialogue expressions that ISKCON has for towards others. And I did interfaith back in the end of the 1990s and beginning of this century.
Mm.
And serial monologue was...
it does come, doesn't it?
So one of the things that we started to realize, how can we contribute to the upliftment of this whole Sangha in such a way that we would be more acceptable and more appreciated by people in other traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we were successful because they liked our prasadam. So, consecutive years, 3 or 4 years in a row, we opted and always got the opportunity to provide prasadam for everyone.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Constantly throughout the seminars and the dialogues and presentations, people would come up and say, "Well, you guys' food is really good."
Yes. And if they don't remember anything from the dialogue, they remember the prasadam.
Yeah, but I think you kind of made a nice point when you said everybody kind of like gives their presentation, smiles at each other, shakes hands, some appreciation. There is a few twisted faces when certain groups look at each other.
Yeah.
Everybody goes home the same way they came.
Something that it's true what you're saying in certain venues, in certain situations. I would perhaps the more formal the dialogues, the more this is the case. And what I've been reflecting on over the years, I've also participated in not many, but a few of these formal dialogues, is how to explore informal dialogue with persons of other faiths who are committed to their faith, but in a more individual way, rather than in these, you know, kind of formal settings where everyone is quite stiff. I had one very nice experience. This was not so many years ago. We had a formal dialogue in South India, a Vaishnava Christian dialogue, organized by our Anuttama Prabhu, who has been doing these Vaishnava Christian dialogues in America since many years. We had one in South India, and there were four different groups. There were Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there were Sri Vaishnavas, there were Roman Catholics, and there were Protestants. Anuttama is very expert at leading these dialogues, and of course everyone gets a lot of prasadam. But I remember there was one moment when one of the senior members of the group, who was Roman Catholic, he was a Catholic priest, at one point he kind of became quite... He felt some feeling of trust in the atmosphere, and so he felt free to say something that he thought, which was a bit different from what the official Roman Catholic Church thinks or says. And he said that. He said, "Oh, I think a little different from them." And when he said that, we all relaxed. Because then we all felt like we could all say what we really think. And I felt like that's when the dialogue really started, in a sense. So sometimes a sort of moment of magic like that can happen. Also the dialogues that happen during, between the sessions, you know, over prasadam. You're sitting with someone from another tradition and just chatting. It can be very nice, very sweet. Thank you. Any other comments, questions, doubts? You want to debate? You want to only preach? You want to... Yes, Prema... Huh? Prema Murti, yes.
I have two questions. Mike.
First question is for this in the religion dialogues. Is it for the older devotees only, or is it for the younger whose state is still not established?
Ah, yeah, good question. Yes, in a sense, it's for everyone. You know, in for the newer person with not so much practice culture of bhakti yoga, it might be on the scale of meeting people and, you know, we call it book distribution. So that can take the form in a very spontaneous sort of way of dialogue. Generally, they are told, go out and just get the book out there. Don't listen to anything anyone says. If they don't take it immediately, just leave. Hare Krishna, don't get me started. But I think there are other ways that we could be training or help encouraging Krishna devotees to quickly mature in their understanding of bhakti, encouraging them in such a way that someone may pose a question, a challenge to them, and they'll think, oh gosh, I don't know how to respond to that. Back to the books, back to, you know, I have to read Bhagavad Gita, whatever. It's generally, or it's often the, a symptom, a feature of persons who are less mature in their faith, that they will show something in the form of a kind of fanaticism. We say in English, my way or the highway. A lot of that is because of insecurity. So the more secure one is in one's faith, in one's culture, in one's practice of what we call bhakti yoga, probably the better that person will be in communicating, in dialoguing with others of other traditions, in such a way that it actually can be interesting and fruitful and developing relationship. One of the points, we just rushed through it, but it's really about developing relationships. There may be so many different understandings, but you can actually, believe it or not, you can make friends with people who believe or do something other than you. Silence, everyone. Hare Krishna. Is that okay?
Beautiful, thank you very much. And the second one is, I saw many opportunities, I see that devotees are very careful or reserved by approaching very close, groups to our tradition, like let's say Gaudiya Math or even some other branches like Sadhu Maharaj or some other things, or even extremely like what to do with the ritviks, let's say.
Oh. Now Now we get down to the nitty gritty. Sigmund Freud had an expression which I find very interesting. He referred to something like, it's called the narcissism of the slight difference. The narcissism of the slight difference. You know what narcissism is, yeah. So, and this is, you can see this all over the world, that, you know, we have our understanding, and someone who is actually very similar in 95% of different points, but on 5% they're different. Whoa, we have nothing to do with them. Maybe there's a good reason to not have anything to do with them, but I think we should also come to a point of such deep understanding of our tradition that we can allow for even these slight differences. It's so much easier to allow for the huge difference between, you know, the Vaishnav is, specifically ISKCON understanding of Krishna consciousness and something of a very different tradition, maybe one of the Abrahamic traditions or whatever. In some ways we feel like that's easier than someone who's very close, but there's this difference, and that makes all the difference. Does it make all the difference? And if that makes all the difference, is that not keeping us from developing a presence in the wider world that would be taken more seriously? Did that make any sense? Again, everyone's silent. I'll leave that as a question. Is that okay? Good. All right. Yes, Malati Malak. Wait. Microphone. And maybe we make this our last.
I want to ask you, when you make friends with someone who is not Vaishnava culture, when you invite them to take prasadam, and they are happy, they are coming, they see the deities and everything, but at some point, they say, okay, now we start.
Now you come to my house and take my food.
Yes. this happened to us recently, and for now we said, okay, we have a special diet. In Slovenia.
Yeah.
This is an open point.
Yeah. Well, we do have a special diet, don't we? And we do kind of insist on that. And some situations, you can say, yes, I'm happy to come. And we will bring something to contribute to the meal. So you cook something, whatever you do, we'll cook something and we'll bring. And you sort of quietly only take what you have cooked. But you can also, you can encourage them to also have something not cooked, right? Some salad, some fruit, like that. Yeah. So, yeah. The subject matter of our programs somehow always end on the subject of prasadam. So, I will say thank you all very much for your kind attention, your patience, and I hope this was in some way interesting and relevant for you, and maybe one day we'll do part 3. Should we do a part 3? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.